Welcome to episode 7 of the Setlist Audio Club with Hayden and Dan, the music podcast by two dudes who know nothing about it. On this week's episode, we're featuring Ween's The Mollusk and James Bay's 2014 Grammy-nominated record, Chaos in the Calm. We've got a great show lined up for you this week, so make sure you stick around and listen to all the hoopla, jokes, and everything in between as we discuss these two very, very different albums. As always, be sure to stay tuned until the end of the episode for a sneak peek of what we're talking about next week. And with that, I'll get out of the way. Enjoy. I got this sweet espresso beans dark chocolate that's like 72% cocoa.
Oh, jeez.
It's pretty intense.
That's dark.
It's really good, though.
That's as dark as I like my men, really.
And that's saying something.
About 72%. That's
saying something.
You ever see that? You've seen Airplane.
Yeah, of course
I've showed you Airplane. Because the first day that I ever saw that movie, I watched it twice at home and then went to your apartment on campus and I made you watch it again with me.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I enjoy that
like
movie
one of my
a lot.
Favorite scenes. Oh, it's so great. One of my favorite scenes is when they're on the plane
and
that little girl, she's like, "No, I like it black. Like my men." And this boy is just, and they're like 8.
Yeah, they're
but, like,
young.
You're super young. But, like, they just don't write it like that anymore, man.
No, they
don't. Really just don't.
It wouldn't fly in today's world.
No, it wouldn't. That airplane would be grounded.
Totally. Totally. I think my favorite part is when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who is the pilot, like, leaves the cockpit and the inflatable takes his place.
Yeah, like, Otto. His name is Otto.
Yeah. But I think the crown jewel of that movie is the drinking problem, where he just like dumps his drink
just
on his shirt,
throws it right in his own face.
I've relied on that joke to get me through so many awkward situations, because like I basically have like early onset Parkinson's, like not really but kind of. And like, I can't hold anything still if it's like on its way to my mouth. Like, I was well known in high school. You weren't there most of the time because you were at Toll's, but I would bring applesauce.
It was better than everybody.
I would bring applesauce for lunch every day.
Okay.
But instead of...
Did you sit crisscross?
No, I didn't. But...
crisscross applesauce?
I wouldn't bring a spoon and I wouldn't get one. Instead, what I would do is take the lid off because it was foil, and I would fold it into a... makeshift spoon, which worked really well.
Same applesauce, the same way.
It works really well. It's a really underrated way to eat applesauce. Anyway, the point being is that I would have to hold the applesauce cup about 3 inches away from my face, because as I scooped it out, it wasn't that the applesauce was heavy and it would like break the spoon, because I would do the like, you know, like the New York pizza fold where you like fold it. Yeah. So I would do something like that.
Shovel
with
it,
the So to create like a spade, like a shovel. And I would just trowel it into my pie hole. But I would have to get really close to the cup, because if it was any longer, I would drop the applesauce on my shirt because I couldn't hold my hand steady to get it from the cup to my mouth.
That just sounds like you're really excited for applesauce.
No, it's really not an excitement thing. Like, I wish that were the case. And I wish it were like a blood sugar thing. Like, I wish it was like, oh, I'm just like so hyped up on caffeine and sugar that like I can't contain myself and... you know, my nervous system just decides that freaking out is what it's going to do today. I really wish that's what it was, but it's like definitely not that. So it just reminds me of that. I can't get things to my mouth. So oftentimes I'll be drinking something and I'll like, my hands will shake a little bit and it'll like make a little bit of a mess, like get on my shirt or whatever. And people will be around and watch and be like, oh, ha ha. Can't drink from a cup, huh? You missed your mouth. And I was like, ah, yeah, I have a drinking problem. And that gets me out of it every single time.
Because that's, if honestly playing that joke on yourself and just being okay with it is just like the ultimate big dick energy move. Because you're just like, it's fine. And I'm going to use this to make you laugh anyway.
I'm just going to lean into it because I know it's funny.
Right? Oh, yeah. Because like, if I were you, I would do the same exact thing.
I'm just like, ah, yeah.
Like, I would like, quote that movie every
same
day.
Same shit, different day.
Yep.
Yeah. But
that's hilarious.
No, Airplane's great. It's great. Love that movie.
That's a great movie.
So many good jokes. So many good jokes.
There's very, very meme worthy. A lot of it is very meme. Even in today's world, like, you can still find an airplane meme or something.
Oh, for sure.
Like, that's, it's just so funny.
Yeah. They pop up from time to time, and I consider them blessings on my timeline.
Oh, yeah. On my feeds. It's just kind of like, yeah, Leslie Nielsen is one of my favorite actors ever. He's the lead guy with the white hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he actually, I don't know if you know this, but he actually used to do, like, soap operas and, like, only did very serious parts. And he was super against doing comedy for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Because whatever reason. And so one day somebody finally convinced him to just, hey, just give this role a try, but do it like you would a normal show. Like, with that same very stern, serious intensity. And he loved it. It was like, I forget what the movie was that he was doing. It might have been Police Squad.
Okay. I don't think I've seen that one.
But, like, it's like one of his earlier ones.
Okay.
It's like the Naked Gun show, I think. Hold on, let me look that up. Yeah, it had one season, Police Squad, and it was the same realm as, like, the Naked Gun series.
Okay. I've not seen that either. Like, I've not heard of either of
those.
One is
a spinoff of the other. I forget which way it goes.
Okay.
But like, that was, he gave it a shot and he loved it, and it just was a smash hit.
Yeah.
Like, he immediately had a cult following, because, like, nobody delivers lines with the seriousness that he does.
He was so deadpan.
Exactly. That was his thing. Like, even in soap operas, that's just how he acted.
Yeah, he's so dry. Everything is just, like, so...
so
every, it's so and, yeah. funny. That's some of my, like, favorite brands of humor. Who's that one? There's a comedian that is, like, really well known for his one-liners. And I think he passed away, but I think his name was Steven. I can't remember off the top of my head, but man, I'll tell you what, deadpan humor is one of the best. Like, just dry delivering punchlines one after another is just, like, hilarious. And favorite lines from that movie: "Don't call me Shirley."
Oh, yeah. Nobody could deliver that line and have it be such an iconic line. But he was just so dead serious. Like, yeah, of course I'm serious. Don't call me. Or, no, I can't be kidding. Don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, don't call me Shirley.
Nobody else could have. Don't call me Shirley. Nobody else could have said that quite the right way. It definitely had to be him to make it have the staying power it's had.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree.
Yeah. So. But speaking of funny stuff, I guess we should probably get into it already, since we're here to talk about music, not movies.
Yeah, for sure.
That should be another podcast we do, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Same thing, except we just, it's like Mystery Science Theater meets this, and we just review B-rated movies.
Honestly, though, there are some gems in the B movies. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's some gems in there. I've heard a couple. My work buddy actually just got a tattoo from some dude in Philadelphia, but the character he got tattooed on his arm is from a B-rated, like, horror film. I'll show you a picture later, but it's dope. The tattoo's really dope.
That'd be great. All right. But anyway. So do you know where you want to start with your pick or mine?
Let's start with mine. I feel like mine's a little bit more, it's easier to talk about. There's less interesting things to talk about there.
Sure.
So here we are. This is episode 7 of the Setlist Audio Club. Of course, I'm your host, Hayden.
I'm Dan.
And this week's picks, we've got a couple of really interesting albums. One of them, I think, less interesting than the other, but they're both fairly good. So first we'll start with my pick. My pick for the week was a 2014 release by James Bay. The album's called The Chaos and the Calm. Did really, 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 really well. It's a 12-song from the normal. The normal album release was 12 songs. The deluxe version has 16 with 3 new tracks and 1 live recording on it. Runtime, we're hitting about 48 minutes. So right in that, you know,
sweet spot
that I've referred to over the episodes. It's got good playability. But yeah, so let's just go ahead and jump right in. So Dan, tell me what were your initial impressions on your first listen of this album?
The first James Bay song I actually remember hearing was Let It Go, which is number 3 on the song or on the album. But I expected the whole thing to sound like that, with that kind of like moody, heartfelt,
yeah,
reverent kind of tone. Mm-hmm. Except that was only like half of it, and it was pretty scattered out and around. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I thought it was very professionally done.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, it was not like, and I say professionally done, there was a lot of effort into making everything very refined and clean sounding. And I like that sound for an artist like James Bay, because it lets everything kind of shine a little more specifically, because he's an amazing vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
The words are very easy to make out on each of the songs, mm-hmm. which I think with a lot of the message, like, that's really important.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So I was going to say for him, I really appreciated the quality that they put into it, where I normally would say, like, there's too much production. I think this one was done very well. There was the right amount and the right qualities.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think his vocal quality is really unique. It's got a rasp to it. Like, it's still, like, really nice and clean. The recordings are really nice and clean, but him as a vocalist, he has, like, a really distinct profile to his vocal tone that I think allows him to stand out a little better. And it's in those higher registers that it really comes out, that he obviously likes to sing in. So it plays to his advantages for sure. Overall, I totally agree. It's a really, really well produced album.
It has a lot of replayability too.
Yeah.
Like, I could listen to this again and again and I wouldn't really get tired of it.
Yep, I agree.
But that being said, the back half of it, I just kind of like, I start losing interest because it all just kind of starts muddying together at like 11 and 12. But
which is about the time like it restarts. So for me, it's got pretty good playability in terms of getting through it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a lot to complain about with it. All in all, it did its job, but it wasn't anything like exceptional, I think.
Yeah. It did win a Grammy, though.
It was good. Did it?
It did.
That's not surprising.
Well, actually, I apologize. It was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Rock Album, while one of the songs, Hold Back the River, was nominated for Best Rock Song, and James Bay was nominated for Best New Artist in 2014.
Really? Hold Back the River?
Yeah. Which is weird to me. Because, like,
I didn't like it.
The obvious standout track to me was Let It Go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, that one is a hit, for sure.
I think that one, was that released as a single, too?
It was, yeah. There was a single release.
Was it?
Before,
oh, okay, that's
and
why.
I think Hold Back the River was on that one as well. Let me double check that.
Oh,
real
a little
quick.
Two-piece. That's possible.
Yeah,
I thought it was really good. I kind of liked the two dynamics to the album, because there was a pretty equal amount of, like, driving rock songs as well as, like, softer, more emotional tunes well.
Yeah.
So I thought there was a really good balance to each of them, which I'm sure is half of the point of Chaos and the Calm. It's kind of that balance between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And what it talks about through the album too is a lot of, like, getting through the chaos of life with somebody and, like, trying to make it all work. And there's a lot of relationship stuff going on.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
I didn't pay
so
that.
I'm sure that's all by design.
I didn't pay that close attention really? To out like what the lyrics were talking about in some of them. I mean, it's pretty obvious in Let It Go what he's talking about. I mean, you could tell by the
name. Yeah.
He's talking, you know, the difficulty of come to terms with the fact that it's time to move on and it's going
to
be okay.
You don't really want to.
Yeah. Like you're not going to want to, you're never going to want to, but sometimes you have to do what you have
to
do.
Happen.
Yeah.
That's right.
So what we talked about some of your initial feelings here. What was your favorite song? I know you mentioned Let It Go. Was that your favorite out of all of them?
I don't know if I would say it was my favorite. It's the one I know the best because it was the single, it was the most popular, and I didn't really dove into the rest of it. Best Fake Smile, I thought, was a really fun jam.
I did too.
Kind of poppy feeling. I liked it because it's, just the beat of it's really fucking dancing.
Yeah, it's up tempo. It's up tempo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Probably Best Fake Smile. Craving was good too. I liked Craving.
Yeah, honestly, like through the opening of the album, it's got a lot of really good songs.
Yeah.
Like tracks 1 through 6. Absolutely. Like I like all of those. Those are all really good. And then it seems to slow down a little bit on the back half to me.
Yeah.
But not in a bad way.
No, it definitely slows down a bit.
I think
after Collide, I think the last three are all.
Yeah, I guess Scars is a little bit more up tempo. That's got a higher tempo. I guess track 7 is a little bit slower. That one's like a almost like a waltz.
Move Together is,
which is kind of funny. Really, it's kind of funny that that's maybe he did that on purpose.
It's possible.
The Move Together is a waltz. Like that's the style of the song.
No, I get what you're going with.
You smell what I'm stepping in?
I smell what you stepping in.
I think everybody on the planet had that presentation in high school where like some dude showed up to your high school to tell you not to do drugs.
Oh,
and stuff.
Yeah, the guy with the shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy with the shoes. Yeah, yeah,
the guy with the shoes. Yeah, that guy.
Well, you know who I'm talking about.
I do. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Exactly.
But we're not being overly descriptive for our audience here.
That's fair. So the guy came to the high school to talk about like depression and reaching out if you need help and all that stuff that you should do. But his presentation was given with like pairs of shoes to like illustrate his point that he was driving home. I don't remember exactly how.
Yeah, wasn't there like,
but like
people who were impacted by the presentation like gave him their shoes?
Like it's,
that was
it's
just like a thing
like that,
people
yeah.
started to do. So he would remember their story and what they said and like how they were impacted by him by presenting the shoe. And like that is, he would associate in his brain their story with that shoe. And then he would take the shoes to other places and like talk about their experiences.
Yeah, it was something like that.
I forgot that detail. I almost forgot that was a thing. You
all I remember was he had a bunch of shoes, so
but at one point he was telling a story and he was like, the most bizarre response to like, do you understand what I'm telling you, like are you guys resonating with what I'm saying, was somebody in the audience at one of his presentations had literally said, I smell what you're stepping in. And he was like, that is the most bizarre way to say, I get it. Like, I understand. I hear you. I smell what you're stepping in. It's like, oh, God.
I love
that. All right.
I love
that. I've commandeered the phrase. I use it all the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I feel like a lot of people have. Like, that. I feel like it's not a uncommon thing anymore.
He made it popular. Go guy with the shoes.
Good job, shoe guy.
Shoe guy.
So what was your shoe guy? What was your bean rating?
Okay, so beans wise, this one gets a little complicated for me. I think it was, to me, it's a better album than Gallant, but it's not a better album than Octavarium for me.
Okay.
So
refresh us on what your bean rating.
So my bean rating for Gallant was 250, and my Octavarium rating was 544. So I'm feeling
a
strong 396.
390. So why specifically 396.
Because I like the way that number rolls off my tongue. I like the way it looks on the page. Okay. And it fits the range I just described. But it's not like, I don't think it's really that close to Dream Theater for me. So like, okay. I think Dream Theater is a much better album. So it's like at least a couple hundred points better. Which is like 150 or so.
That's fine.
So for me, that fits. And it's better than Gallant by about the same margin. So it's about a midpoint between those two. So I'm going to just, I'm going to rock with it.
I like that. I was just curious if you had a reason.
No, I never have a reason. This is all completely by gut.
All right. That's how I do it too.
But what about you? What was your bean rating here?
I was at a soft 71.
Soft 71.
Yeah. Like it could go up or down a little bit more.
Was 71 like plus or minus 2?
Plus or minus 2.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's respectable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's relatively good. I mean, it's not as good as Car Seat Headrest, which is pretty solid.
I thought the subject matter for Car Seat Headrest and the songwriting itself for Chump Free from Feed Me Jack, those both just were a little bit better than Chaos in the Calm, but they were still like relatively close in quality. So I didn't want it higher than them, but I also didn't really want it lower than like 68.
Yeah, then I think you hit the nail right on the head there.
Yeah,
I thought there were a lot of good songs on it. I thought honestly, Scars is really good. Collide is really good. I thought the last three songs were pretty forgettable, but not bad.
I don't think there's a bad song on here. But like you said, the last three are forgettable.
Okay, so here's an interesting question. If you were to take one song out of this album, what song would it be? If you were to eliminate a song from the track list completely, just I could do without it. What song would you get rid of?
I honestly, one of the last three, 10, 11, or 12, because honestly, I couldn't tell you what any of them really sound like because I just didn't pay that much attention.
That's fair.
Maybe Move Together just because it's so slow.
Really?
It feels like it drags.
I like that song.
To me, anyways.
I like it a lot.
I don't hate it.
That's one of my favorite ones to like sing along to in the car.
I don't know. I guess that one for me.
Okay. Interesting. I think my pick is probably either 11 or 12. One of those two.
Yeah. I would agree on 11.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm leaning.
All right. That's, well, settled. We're going to write a strongly worded lesson. Worded letter to James Bay and tell him to get rid of Need the Sun to Break. Just delete it. We don't
just
really
because.
Need it.
I don't actually have a reason. Just because.
We don't. Nope. That's the fun thing about America is you don't need to have a reason to write somebody a strongly worded letter. You can just do whatever you want.
I mean, you can. They might hate you for it, but, you know, can.
They're gonna hate us for writing a letter?
Yeah, he's going to be like, who are you and why should I care? And the answer is, you shouldn't, so don't listen to me.
You shouldn't. Exactly. That's
honestly, there's way too many people out there that think they have opinions people actually give a shit about. And newsflash, nobody cares. And nobody should listen to you. No one.
Never.
Nobody should listen to me. I have no idea what I'm talking about most of the time. Are you kidding me?
People ask me for advice, and I'm just like, I'm not the guy you want to ask.
It's like,
I don't know what I'm doing.
I think you should make a decision on your own there.
Right. Please don't involve me. I'm not responsible for other people.
Yeah, I got enough to handle with my own life here. Let me not be responsible for things happening in yours.
I have cats because I can leave them alone for 3 days and I don't have to worry about them dying.
That's fair.
Like, that's half the reason we love it.
I feel like that's like indicative of a certain type of person. Like if you can't handle a dog, if you can't handle having to take a dog outside every once in a while, like, I mean, it is what it is. Like, cat people are going to be cat people. Nothing wrong with it. It's just the way that they are. Anywho. Yeah. Anyway, I thought the James Bay album was good. I've been listening to it for a while. I remember when it came out. We were just graduating high school when it released. So
we were. Yeah. 2014. Yeah.
Wow. I remember rocking that album a couple of times. I remember it being really prevalent. You remember back in the day when the Grammys used to release like a compilation album?
I've literally never paid attention to the Grammys a day in my life.
Well, they used to, once upon a time, I don't know if they still do this or not. I bet they probably do. But they used to basically take tracks from all of the nominees for various things and build like one big long playlist basically. And they burned it to a CD and put it out in stores. And it was like the Grammys of whatever year. So there was like the 2014 Grammy Awards album, and it was a bunch of tracks from Grammy nominated artists, or if there was like a song that was up for a nomination, it was on there. So it was usually like a greatest hits of what that year's music was, which was kind of cool. It was a cool way to like basically do a, hey, a bunch of critics came together and want you guys to know about all this music. And some of it you knew about, right? It was like Beyonce's albums got released that year, so there'd be a track or two from her on there. Like Adele was a normal guest on those albums just because her songs usually end up at the Grammy Awards some way, somehow. Taylor Swift was a usual, you know, feature on those. The list goes on. So you were aware of like most of the songs, but it was a way to like get all of those songs in one album and not have to buy like three of them. Or like buy every one of those artist albums. Now, in terms of like distribution of royalties, I don't know if they actually like honor that. So I don't know if this is a good idea or not, but that's just how my family did things when I was growing up. Like I think my mom bought the Grammy album every year when it came out. And that's what we listened to in the car all the time. So I remember when this came out because this was nominated for Best Rock Album. James Bay was nominated for Best New Artist, and then Hold Back the River had a nomination like I mentioned earlier. So I've been listening to this thing for a while now. So I thought it would be an interesting pick. Wasn't sure if you'd heard it before, so was pleased to hear that you actually enjoyed it to some extent.
Yeah, it was definitely good. Definitely was not even close to the worst thing we've listened to.
For sure.
Not even close. But hopefully this next album just might hit that box for you.
Anyway, here we are in halftime.
Halftime. I was going to say, first things first, are you drinking anything special tonight?
I'm drinking a sparkling water. The brand is Aha.
Ooh.
And it is blueberry pomegranate. Aha. It's actually pretty good.
Delicious.
I've been on a sparkling water kick lately. We went to Wyoming over Christmas and, we were staying at my sister-in-law's house and her boyfriend, they live there. And they had, basically their fridge was full of sparkling water. And it created an itch I had to scratch when I got home. So I bought these.
Sparkling's one of those, has a following. People who drink sparkling water love sparkling water.
Well, I wasn't like a huge fan of it before. And the reason why is because I have this like artificial expectation about how syrupy it is, like how sweet it is, because I expect it to be like Sprite, but it's not Sprite.
Which is very syrupy.
It's not soda. It's not like pop. It's not like Coke, you know, it's water with bubbles in it.
Yeah. And like a little bit of flavoring.
Yeah. So it's not supposed to be strong. It's not supposed to be sweet. It's supposed to be water with a hint of something and bubbles.
But interesting.
And like,
right.
Once I got over the hump of like, oh my God, this tastes like crap because I'm used to like the super sweet, you know, Sprite, Coke, Sunkist, whatever. I really started to enjoy it. You ever had a Topo Chico? You know what that is?
Yeah, I know what Topo Chico is.
Dude, that is by far the best sparkling water. And it is
a lot of sparkling.
Aggressively bubbly.
A lot of. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so fantastic.
The there's a guy I follow on Instagram. He's actually I think he's the food and bev director at Watershed.
Okay.
and he had, and he's kind of a memer. He loves being a meme guy. So I don't know if he was paid to do this or if he just did it because he's a big fan of the product, but he would post the same ad sounding thing where he's like, I opened my Topo Chico a night before, but it's still bubbly, just not cold, sad face. And I just would lose it every time he would put that on his story.
Where like, just like I every know single if... one of his posts like seems like it could be a sponsored advertisement, but it's not.
Right. That's kind of, yeah. But like, but it was only for Topo Chico. I like, so that's why I think he's just a huge fan. But yeah, no, it's, I've heard multiple from multiple people who drink bubbles a lot that Topo Chico is like the baseline good.
It is.
It's like that
creme
or like
de la creme, Perrier. My dude. Cream of the crop.
Yeah, like that's like the Weller of sparkling water.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Like
the lemon,
like
and
good
the
quality
lime are like undefeated for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But these Ahas aren't terrible, but we also they also had another brand at the house we were staying at that was called Spindrift. And they sell it at Costco in like 30 can packs or whatever.
They sell everything at Costco.
And that stuff was actually like probably the closest to actual soda that I've had that is still sparkling water.
Really?
Yeah.
Like just sweet?
Like it's flavored naturally, so it's if it's lemon, it's got like lemon juice in it. Like actual lemon juice.
Okay.
But they put more in it than the other brands do. So like it is more lemony than another brand's similarly flavored sparkling water. So it's a little different. For me, it's better than some of the other ones without buying Topo because Topo's kind of expensive. So we actually renewed our Costco membership today and bought a pack. So I'm pretty stoked on that.
Hey.
But yeah, that's what I'm drinking tonight. Taking part in dry January because the end of December usually gets pretty wild. So between Christmas parties and hanging out with family and stuff and you know, seasonal affective disorder, that's all part of it. So
I got belligerently drunk New Year's Eve night. I drank 2/3 of a bottle of Woodford Reserve. It was...
That is quite a
hands
lot.
Hands down, the most whiskey I've consumed in one night in the last probably 8 years. And woke up the next day with COVID.
Dan, how old are you?
So that was terrible. 25.
So let's do some math here. 8 years ago, it's mean you were 17. How much whiskey were you drinking when you were 17?
I was more of a rum man at the time.
That's fair.
So not a lot. I mean, like,
I'm just
what
like,
else do 17-year-olds drink?
I'm just setting a baseline here. You said this is the most you drank in the last 8 years. I'm like, well, that sounds like all of the time you've been drinking whiskey. So
yeah, give or take. It was a lot. But yeah, then we woke up the next day with COVID. So that was terrible. And this is like the first day that we haven't been in quarantine.
Oh, you guys are out of quarantine already?
Today,
I know the
rules.
I know the rules keep changing. So
we did it. We only stayed inside for 5 days past exposure because she had to go back to work tonight.
Yeah, I think the guidance from the CDC is saying 5 days is about average, but like basically once you're not really symptomatic anymore, you're probably good to go.
Yeah. Neither of us are symptomatic. It was a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
It was just a really intense couple of days.
Oh yeah. Tell me about it. So, my bout with COVID in September was pretty rough for the first, it's about 48 hours of like really sucky, but like after that, it was fine.
2 or 3 days, I actually coughed up whatever it was in my lungs, and then I literally was better that evening.
Yeah, that's like Mucinex, dude. Mucinex will just like clear you out, and then you're good to go. It's like magic to me. Like, is that Mucinex DM? I think.
DM. Oh yeah, we got the pills and the liquid because I went to the bottle and got the liquid, and then her mom dropped off a little care package with some of the pills in it, and we were just like, sweet.
Yeah, dude, that stuff's incredible.
Mucinex.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Right, we're getting really, We're getting really sidetracked here.
What are you drinking? Are you just drinking water or something?
Water, just water. Yeah, I'm not touching booze. I'm not drinking liquor at all this month.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But on the heels of Dan mentioning that he had COVID very recently, we are doing this entirely remote again. We did one episode back in person, and here we are doing it remotely. So
we're back remote because I got COVID.
It is what it is. The world is nice and crazy right now, so you know we're making it work.
Adapt, overcome. Improvise, adapt, overcome. That's what.
Yeah, I always forget the order of those.
I'm missing a piece. It doesn't matter. Anyways, moving on. So for the next album we're doing tonight is The Mollusk by the band Ween.
Ween.
This is probably one of the most commonly referred to albums as an inspiration for the show SpongeBob.
I mean, it's not really heavy inspiration.
Right. So, and it's not really like actually printed anywhere that it is, but oral tradition passed down through stoner to stoner and chef to apprentice in my industry. Steven Hillenburg, the creator of SpongeBob, was a really big Ween fan to the tune of, yeah, I think you told me earlier, they wrote the song for the loop-de-loop song in SpongeBob, which is where they're learning how to tie their shoes.
Yep.
And Ocean Man was the rolling credits for the first SpongeBob movie.
Indeed it was.
So, you know, according to things considered,
the all-knowing Wikipedia.
Yeah, so all things considered, it's probably not a far stretch of saying that that's a true story. That being said, what was your... So I'm going to ask you the same thing you asked me about James Bay. First reaction, what did you think?
Okay, so I'll tell you the story about me listening to this for the first time. So before you mentioned it, I'd never heard of the band. I think I'd heard of the band Ween. I think you'd probably mentioned them a couple of times, but
I'd
never checked them out. Like, I'd never actually listened to it. So this was a raw experience.
Good.
This was the first time.
Good. That's what I was really hoping for too. That makes me happy.
And I was like, as soon as we agreed that this is what we were going to do this week, I was like, all right, cool. So I went to the gym and I had my headphones on and I was like, I'm going to listen to this album to work out, but I'm gonna get on like a bike or something, like a stationary bike, and do some cardio so that I'm not like moving around and thinking about other stuff. I'll be in one spot. That's the best place for me to be able to like listen and like take in what it is I'm listening to and or suffer through it and be staring at the time the whole time.
And you're not on a treadmill, so like if you stop moving, you're not gonna just fall off.
Right, I'm not gonna like die. So Right. I was in a very safe place, safe and secure,
nice.
Setting myself up for a good experience. So I'm listening to this album. It starts out real weird. That first track is real strange. The whole like pitch inflections and like the change in, you know, what they're doing with their voice.
Shapeshifter kids show tune.
Yeah, kind of.
Is how I described that one.
Yeah.
Because like you said, the vocals is a constantly morphing voice.
Yeah.
Like it changes so seamlessly through it because it's been so perfectly stitched together and it's just...
It is really smooth. I'll give them credit for that. Like they pull it off really well.
It's so well done.
It doesn't sound choppy or anything like that. It sounds like you ease one right into the next and there's sort of like this ebb and flow from like this like really low register stuff to this like... Honestly, you hear bits and parts of that song where like the inflection of like SpongeBob's voice like stands out to me really strong.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like him. Yeah, there's definitely parts where I heard it too.
Where I'm like, oh,
I was
shit.
Like, man, that sounds just like SpongeBob.
It does. But so I made it through the opening track. I made it through the opening track finally. The whole 2 minutes it was. I was feeling like it was being gracious to me by only being a minute and 56 seconds. I was like,
"It's
thank
they're
you,
definitely
Lord.
Kind with that."
Thank you, Lord.
But buddy, that's not even the weird one.
Oh, I know. But it kicks into the Mollusk, and the Mollusk is like pretty normal. But they do more of that like shifting between high register stuff and low register stuff. The mollusk is more of like a conversational mm-hmm. type thing. Like there's like one person and then there's like another person and it's supposed to be this back and forth thing. That felt weird to me at first and I wasn't sure I was like really enjoying it. But since I've come around on it a lot, it's one of my favorite tracks on the whole album.
It's weird, but it's kind of like eating something foreign for the first time. At first you're like, I don't know if I like this. And then as you kind of get used to it, you're
hey,
like,
hey, yeah, this is pretty good.
Okay. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. It's like eating blue cheese. Like once you get past that funk, it's okay.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this like actually has a pleasant bite to it. It's like actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Like I could, yeah. I would like want that on something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as we keep going, we go through Polka Dot Tail, which is a weird song.
Yeah, it's polka.
And then Johnny on the Spot hits, and I'm like, all right, these guys are... It kind of gave me... You ever listen to a Blink-182 record?
Yeah.
So, like, they'll throw those little interjections in there that are, like, pretty up-tempo, or they're just, like, really short mm-hmm. bursts of, like, something stupid, just being funny.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like it was starting to be that. When the song kicked up, because it's just so different from the rest of them.
Yeah. Well, I thought that one and Waving My Dick in the Wind had kind of the same.
Yeah, energy. Totally. Yeah, no, definitely.
Like,
definitely.
They were both those like really kind of fast tempo driving songs.
It was almost the drum beats like basically exactly the same in both.
It's to the same tempo and everything.
But the guitar
is like those are the two drivers.
Yeah. The guitar riff is a little different.
Yeah, and then the rest of it is a lot more kind of like splashy psychedelic feel.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the weird kids show tune and polka and...
But then we hit Mutilated Lips. And this one, yeah. I felt like I was LSD listening to it.
Dude, what I said was that sounded like... That song specifically to me sounded like Frank Zappa did mushrooms with the Beatles.
Like it just like
it was really
the wah-wah, the like phaser thing going on in the background was like really wavy. And then they start talking about like the chorus of it where it's like mutilated lips, give a kiss on the wrist. I was like, I could see it in my brain and I was like, this is disgusting. Yeah. I hate this imagery. But I was like, I could totally see how somebody just like dropped acid and was like, yo, I just saw the weirdest shit, and
they were
I'm
going to
write about it,
probably.
And this is what came out. So I was like pretty
I wouldn't
taken
be surprised
aback,
if that, yeah.
but it stood out to me like that. And that it's kind of funny, though, because that's one of my favorite lines on the album. It's one of the most memorable ones. Like, I could just rattle it off like the second time they said it. I was like, oh, it just like steps right through the whole thing. And it's like this picture that I can very clearly map out in my brain of like, oh, it's somebody like actually doing something and like I could describe it and it just happens to line up. So I found that part to be really interesting. But other than that, weird. Then you hit the Blarney Stone, which is basically like a blackout drunk
Agro-Irish
bar tune.
Very
aggressive.
It really was.
Very aggressive. It kind of felt like, excuse me. I think if I were to describe the tone of the song, it would be the tone of an Irish sailor who came home after a really long, arduous, you know, sailing adventure, boat expedition, and probably lost a leg or two on the way.
Probably.
I see the person who's singing this as having probably the most sea captainly beard of all time.
Oh, huge, with like a wooden, like a corn cob pipe and an old, like old sailor captain hat.
And definitely an eye patch.
Yeah. Eye patch, 100%.
Yeah, this is an eye patch kind of guy. But that's very aggressive. As soon as I started
to listen, he has both eyes.
One's just like got like one of those scar things over it and it's like blind, but it's still in there, but he just covers it.
Oh, no. Both eyes work. It's just an aesthetic thing.
Actually, it's literally that reminds me. Thing. That reminds me of an episode. I think it was on MythBusters that they had a theory, or there was a myth out there that pirates used to wear an eye patch not because they lost an eye, but because they wanted to cover one up so that it could see in the dark. So then, basically, when they were raiding boats in the dark, they would put the eye patch on the other eye, and because that eye was already acclimated to the dark, it could see right away, and the other one couldn't because it was like switching or something, which doesn't really line up because like it's not like it goes like daytime, nighttime, like right away, and then all of a sudden you can't see. Like it's pretty gradual. So I don't know how much truth there is to that, but that just reminds me of that episode of Mythbusters where they wore an eye patch on one side and then like tried to see if they could see in the dark better. Like,
it's not functional. He just likes the aesthetic. He likes the aesthetic of having an eye patch.
I like the aesthetic of having an eye patch. That's all it is. I've worn an eye patch a couple of times, actually. Fun fact. Nice. I scratched my cornea.
Should do that more often.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that more often, but I did wear an eye patch a couple of times. It was not lit.
Nice.
It hurt a lot. I've actually scratched my cornea twice. I think it was both eyes. I've done it at least once.
You should really stop doing that.
It's not like I'm doing it on purpose. One time I fell and I hit my eye on a chair. Like, you know, like the backs of chairs. How like sometimes they have the things that go up on either side and they're sometimes pointy.
Yes.
Yeah, I hit my eye on that. I tripped in my house and fell on it. And then the other time I was actually on the field for marching band in college. And I was an alternate, so I was helping move around. We had these big, giant, basically like giant signs, but they fold up because it's basically made out of billboard material, like the stuff they make billboard signs out of, but a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
But we'd have these big banners, and we'd need a whole bunch of people to help pull them taut so that you could read it from the stands, and they're huge.
Yeah.
But I was helping out one game. And I think we were doing a Las Vegas show was the theme. And we were doing a slot machine. Well, on a slot machine, the banners rotate and they have different, like, or like the icons on the slot machine rotate. Well, we had banners to represent that and we would flip through them. Well, that takes a lot of effort and a lot of moving fabric. And then there's on turf fields, there are these little rubber pellets. They're like ground up old tires that fill in the gaps and make it squishy like grass. Because obviously like the turf itself like isn't squishy and it's not as dense as real grass. And then there's no dirt.
Right.
So there's nothing to absorb the shock. So they fill it in with this tire stuff. Well, we were like flipping one of the banners and the banner came up and hit me in the eye while it was open.
Ah.
And like a piece of the turf thing, we called them turf turds. It like hit me in the eye while it was open. And then I like straight up couldn't see the rest of the day out of that eye. Like I had to keep it closed.
Turf turds.
Yeah. Dude, they got everywhere. And static is like such a bad thing with turf. Like if you spend a lot of time on turf, you come home with like a boatload of it all the time. Like I remember my dorm room floors were just covered in like leftover turf, and then the little rubber pellets would get in your shoes. So you'd like take your shoes off and they would just like come out and then they'd be all in your socks and stuff. Oh my God, it was so annoying.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it was pretty not fun. But yeah, so I had to wear an eye patch for a couple days because I scratched my cornea in that process.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the track list here. It's going to be all right.
What about the rest of it?
The rest of it
is all right.
I thought it was all right. A couple standout tracks to me, Waving My Dick in the Wind. That's pretty fun. I like that song.
See old Jimmy Wilson dance.
Buckingham Green, I actually got a lot out of. I thought that one was cool.
Really?
I dug the vibe a lot. I don't know why, but it was good. I also like the back half of it. It's got like an orchestral thing to it. It's kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ocean Man. Ocean Man's my favorite. That song stood out to me probably because it was in the SpongeBob movie credits. Not that I recognized that right away. Like I didn't, that didn't like ding in my brain or anything like that. But I knew right away that that was the standout from all of them. I was like, okay, this is by far the best, like most poppy, like acceptable track on the whole thing. So
I think it's the most approachable.
Yeah, I think that was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, it's because there's not a lot of really weird stuff. Like, the weirdest point is just that he inhales, what is it, hexafluoride? The gas that makes your voice super low.
Deep.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. So he it sounded cool.
Yeah, no, it's something that they do regularly because he's so Dean, I think, is the singer, and he actually trained his voice to go that low naturally.
Yeah.
But when they first released the album, he actually had to use the gas to help him like drop his voice to that octave. But that's just kind of the silly shit that they do. Like, that's not an uncommon thing for them to is to play with like vocal tones and like adding weird details to things and like using very non-traditional ways to go about making music.
Yeah, it felt like a lot of this was very experimental. Like, there's a really heavy emphasis throughout the whole album, as I've like taken time to digest it, because it's been a while since we've recorded.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very synth heavy. Like, there's a lot of synthesizer going on. And I mean that in a way like,
yeah,
sometimes it's not obvious that they're using a synthesizer. There's also like big giant, have you ever seen one of those, what are they called? I think they're called modular synths. They're like,
yeah, I have no idea.
Huge boards that you like. You ever seen a guitar pedal board? You know what that
sure.
is? Where like sure. guitarists will line up like 8 or 10 pedals in a row and they're all like patched together with these little cables.
Yeah.
So that you can like pass one effect. So one could be like a distortion effect and then the other one could be like a phaser. Then the other one could be like a delay. And then you just like basically build on top of the original signal to make it something completely different. On the other side.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like that, but it's a synthesizer. And you have like basically infinite possibilities of how it comes together to make a loop. Because that's usually what happens, right? Is you choose a tone or you make it jump through a series of tones and then you do different things to that signal to make it sound different on the other side. It felt like most of this album was centered around like, what are some stuff we made on a synthesizer that like sounds pretty cool?
Yeah.
Like it's not as like beep boop bloopy as some of like, you know, Radiohead. Sometimes they can get into that space. And it's not like very EDM y. Yeah. It's not electronic focused by any means, but it felt like there was an understated synthesizer thing going on. Like, basically, in every track, it's different.
So you said it sounded kind of experimental.
Very.
What if I told you that this is actually, this is very in their wheelhouse? Like, this is, none of this is outside of what they would normally do.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me literally at all. Like, it feels natural.
This is like another day at the office. Yeah, this is like another day at the office for them.
Yeah.
So what's really interesting about Ween as a band is that they have a very strange ability to be able to play a lot of different styles of music almost perfectly. And to the tune of like, I don't want to say perfectly, that's probably a little extreme, but they can play things like a show tune. So like, we're going to go through this album itself. So the show tune for I'm Dancing in the Show Tonight, that was very obviously a show tune. Like, it wasn't a take on one. Like, it was, that sounded like the intro to an actual musical. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it had the same exact, the same structure, the same flow and quality, just it was flavored differently. Whereas like Polka Dot Tail, that was a very classic polka. It had the boom, 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 boom to it. Like,
yeah.
Every song that they do is a very specific style done very, very well. It's just in a really weird flavor, basically, to put it in kind of game terms. You know, the Blarney Stone, that's an Irish drinking song. You identified it immediately.
Yeah, they wear their inspiration on their sleeve, definitely.
Yeah, it's, they definitely get out there, but they also have had releases like the song Gabrielle is a classic rock jam. Like, it's not at all in, it's not at all, and that came out on their Shinola album, I believe, back in 2005. But like, it's not weird at all. It's a very classic like rock and roll tune.
Yeah, but it feels like they do have a bit anything. Of range, I think is the word.
Insane amount of range. Your Party, the song Your Party, you know that one. I've played that one for you 1,000 times. They actually brought in, for, and that's on their La Cucaracha album. It's the closing track. They didn't know how to properly play the jazz sax, right? They just didn't think that they could execute to the quality that they wanted. So what they did was they called a musician by the name of Dave Koz. And what Dave Koz does is he plays jazz sax incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, instead of us trying to do it ourselves and goofing it, let's bring him in. And that way we make sure that the music that goes on there is traditionally a jazz sax, because that's what they wanted the song to sound like.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, they have a lot of dedication to their music and making it right rather than being selfish, or not selfish, self-centered in it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Is maybe the word I want to go with.
No, but I could see that.
I respect them very much as artists because they take really bold risks and sometimes it really, really pays off. Like for Ocean Man, that wasn't really a bold song, but it was a good one. It's probably their most famous.
Oh, definitely. I'm looking at their profile on Apple Music right now, and Ocean Man is their top song by far.
Number one. Oh, for sure.
Then there's some songs on the Chocolate and Cheese record that show up next.
Yeah. Chocolate and Cheese was also a really good one. You know, but then you also, they get songs there. Oh, yeah. Check out La Cucaracha, White Pepper, and Chocolate and Cheese.
I was like, it's kind of crazy because I'm looking at these album lists here. At least on Apple Music, it shows Mollusk as the sixth album from Ween. So they have quite the discography going on here. I mean, they've got 10 albums.
They have a lot of music, and a lot of it is really good.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah. So what was your bean rating for the album with all of this said? And
this one's kind of a challenge. I don't find myself going back to it quite that frequently. I think there's songs on it I will revisit. But overall, I'm going to put it probably somewhere close to Foo Fighters. Let's go. I'm going to go 215.
Okay. You thought it was better than Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace?
Yes. Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
I think it's a good album.
I can respect
it. It's good. I could see why people like it. I can see the appeal behind Ween in general. Just a couple of goofy dudes basically in a recording studio at this point in their career. Who are just having fun. And sometimes they make stuff that sounds really cool. Sometimes it comes across as really weird, but I also could see why this is basically the stoner soundtrack, in that if you just like lit up and sat in a room and listened to this, like, you'd have a great time.
It's very true. It is a stoner classic. People who have been into the herb, and most kitchens, honestly, too, because there's a lot of us there. But you mentioned Ween, and 8 out of 10 people are probably going to know exactly who they are. And the only 2 out of 10 that don't are either children or don't smoke pot. And even
I think that's a fair valuation. It's like, I've talked to other people about Ween, and they're like, oh, I love Ween. And I'm like, oh, like, they actually have like a dedicated following. Like, people like
very much
guys.
So. Yeah, they have a cult for sure. It's kind of like Fish and Grateful Dead.
Mm. Yep.
They have a very dedicated following. These guys definitely have a dedicated following.
Yeah. And since they're basically born out of the 90s, I mean, 6 of their releases were in 1990 to 2000. And then they released in 2000 as well. So they had 7 albums out in a 10-year span. Like, that's busy. You're busy.
Yeah, they definitely did that. They released a Bananas and Blow in 18, which is...
That was a compilation album.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was just a compilation of some older stuff. But
yeah, it looks like it's basically a greatest hits.
Yeah, other than that, that's literally it. That's all they've been.
Yeah.
which is
I wonder if they're still bad. Are they still a band, do you think?
I don't think they're performing. I could be wrong though.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Obviously, they haven't released a real album since 2007. They have a couple live ones. It looks like they did God Ween Satan in 2016 live. Okay. Or at least it was released in 2016. I have no idea if that was a concert that took place in 2016.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I mean, I would be interested to see what they could come up with in 2022. You know, it's been 15 years since they released an album, which sounds wild, but it is true.
If they released an album this year, I would probably buy it. I would probably go to the vinyl store. Well, I don't know if I would go to the vinyl store and buy it. I would listen to it first and then determine if I want to buy it or wait a year until I can get a used one. I don't know. Depends on how much it costs.
Anyway, good stuff. Either way, good stuff. Yeah. What about you? Where does this land for you in terms of beans?
So, probably pretty high. It's gonna land at a sweet little 85, which is now my third album with an 85 rating.
It is.
Apparently that's a good number for me.
I mean,
it was
85 is like a 80, B on a test.
85 is too, it's too high.
You think it's worse?
81. Yeah. So the reason I'm dropping it down is because, like, it is kind of weird, and I'm not always in the mood to listen to it.
Oh yeah, definitely. The thing is, I feel that.
I have to be in the mood to listen to it.
Yep.
But it's a really creative album. They did a lot of really, really fun stuff.
Yeah.
But that, you know, the song Pink Eye on My Leg, I could just get rid of that. That would be wonderful.
So is that, you know, would that be your pick to eliminate from the track list if you could?
Yeah. Number 10, yeah. Pink Eye on My Leg. Because it's literally just like this little jam in the background and then just,
and dog barking.
And then like a dog barking. Like that's it. That's the whole song.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about the like synth thing where like, they totally just made sounds. And they were like, hey, that kind of sounds like a dog. Hey, that kind of sounds like a dude. Like, just going,
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely kind of how it sounds.
Yeah. I think
what about you? Is there a song you want to get rid of?
I think if I had to pick one, it would either be that one or Cold Blows the Wind.
Okay.
Which is the one right before it. I thought those two were like pretty not great.
Yeah, that's all right.
But, you know, they don't have to be good. It's not my decision. Nah. I'm not the one who put out the album. And obviously people like it, so whatever. To each their own.
That's all right.
I think it's funny, though, how on both of these albums we were sort of both on the same page. Except for on James Bay, you said you would get rid of... forget which one. Move Together. You said you'd get rid of that. But you agreed with me on number 11, it's... so we'll mark it as being consistent.
That's fair. The Mollusk was actually one of the albums when we first decided to do this podcast was it was like the one that I was just like, he's listening to that. I don't care.
I'm doing it.
Because like as an album, it did for me what OK Computer did for you.
I love that album so much.
And a lot of people do. And a lot of people reference OK Computer as an album that changes the way that they saw music.
I don't think it changed the way I see music, but it's really good. It's a good album.
I've had servers I've worked with tell me that OK Computer changed. Like, I've had two... You told me about it, and then like two other people I used to work with at completely different times told me about it.
Have we reviewed that yet?
I'm sorry, a server
yet?
And a cook. No, I honestly half expected you to put it on here.
Okay, that might make an appearance.
I'm surprised you didn't.
Season two. I'm surprised.
Spoiler
as well.
Alert. Wee woo, wee woo. Yeah. Wee woo, wee.
Sorry. Wee woo, wee woo.
Calm.
I had to whip out my Patrick impression.
Mm-hmm. I like it. All right. Well, Time for my favorite part of the game, part of the podcast.
Do you want to play a game?
You want to play a game? It's time for Shit Poster Song Lyric, the game where I change the name every time because I can never remember which way it goes.
And I'm always winning.
Yeah, you've lost three times.
My record is 147 and 3.
I was going to say 744, but yep.
Eh, that's a rounding
744 and 3. That's fair. So yeah, I'm going to read either a song lyric or a shit post, and Hayden has 5 seconds to tell me if it's one or the other. Are you ready?
I was born ready.
All right. It's a dog. Go.
Song lyric.
Done. Ooh, I'll give that to you. And yes, it is a song lyric.
Hell yeah. Well, on my side, I was counting in my head and I was definitely within those 5 seconds. So
I hit the stop a little bit late and I was at like 5.6. So I give it to you.
All right. So it's a song lyric. What song is it from?
It is a Tyler, the Creator song.
Ooh, which one?
Crap, where'd it go? Parking Lot.
Is that from his new album?
I don't know. It's from Parking Lot. I don't listen to Tyler, the Creator.
I love Tyler, the Creator. I went to one of his concerts. This would have been 2019.
Okay.
And it was very fun. I had a great time.
Yeah, I'm not a super big rap guy, so I just never got into
it. Which one is this from?
I don't know.
I really hopped on the train with Flower Boy. That's a great album. You should check that one out.
Okay.
It's not aggressive rap. Goblin is like really aggressive rap. That one's got a song called Yonkers on it. I think you'd like a lot.
Yonkers.
Yep. Parking Lot.
Actually, you know what? I might have heard the song Yonkers. I might have heard that already.
I mean, pretty much everybody has. Oh. What is that? What album is that? Wolf. Oh, okay.
I don't know.
I don't think I've listened to this one.
Oh, Wolf, yeah.
Huh. It's, all right. Oh. I already have it in my... Okay. Guess I need to go listen to that then. I'd not heard that one, but I'm glad I got it right.
Nice.
Now I'm 767 and 3.
Yeah, close enough.
Killing it. Look at me. Setting the example.
That works.
All right, awesome. Well, like I said, couple of really interesting albums. I thought The Mollusk was way more interesting than the James Bay record. That being said,
the
James Bay record, pretty good to me. I think it's got a lot of replay value, so I'll keep listening to it. I'll definitely be sure to check out some of these other Ween releases because I'd like to see what else they've come up with. Their creativity sort of speaks to me in a little bit. So
they really bend some rules around. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, they definitely aren't.
They do
like toting a line at all. They're just like, yeah, we're gonna do it whatever we want, and it feels very experimental. It feels like you're going through an experiment with them, which is kind of neat.
It is fun. It is a very fun band to listen to.
But I think that does it for this week's episode. Thanks for checking it out. What do we got for next time?
We are doing Don't Wake the Riot by Black Pistol Fire and Justified by Justin Timberlake.
I'm so excited for you to listen to Justified, man. I love that album.
I've never listened to Don't Wake the Riot, so here's to hoping it doesn't suck.
First time for both of us.
I've listened to a couple of the songs off of it, but not all of them.
Nice.
Or maybe I have. I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. I think
is this another like Spotify?
No.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember. But I know it's going to sound nothing like Justin Timberlake. So it's definitely going to be, we have a very good habit of doing very different albums.
Hey, it keeps things interesting. I'm not complaining at all.
No, I like it. And we've had albums in the past too that were like Octavarium and the Toe album were
sort of,
you know, we both agreed parallel. that those They were squarely both math rock.
Yeah.
In their own ways, but like very different kinds of math rock.
Yeah.
Right. Or prog rock. I'm sorry. You're right. Prog rock. And then we hit stuff like Vista Kicks and then Gallant, which were just two incredibly different albums as well.
I don't think they could be more different.
I like how we can find similarities in very different things, but also that we're doing a lot of different stuff.
Yeah. I think it keeps things interesting, keeps things moving forward. But excited for the next one. So we'll have to check these out. Can't wait.
Absolutely. Can't wait. All right. Well, I'm going to go make a sandwich because it's 8:30 and I'm hungry.
Yeah, I feel that. So, all right. Toodaloo, dude.
Toodaloo.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 7 of the Setlist Audio Club with Hayden and Dan, the music podcast by two dudes who know nothing about it. Be sure to catch us in the next episode where we're talking about Justin Timberlake's Justified and Black Pistol Fire's Don't Wake the Riot.
If you like the show, please consider subscribing anywhere you get your podcasts. Also, follow us on Twitter at SetlistAC for show updates and weekly previews. If you have any questions, have any feedback for us, or even have ideas for future episodes, feel free to shoot us an email at setlistac@gmail.com or send us a DM on Twitter @setlistac.